Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Fade out continues as we welcome you to Bar Down Breakdown episode 2600. I don't know.
We have a lot of episodes. Look it up. It's only 205, but that's how professional we are.
Oh, 205 live right now? That's what we are?
We're not even going live.
We're coming to you where the cruiser waits.
I have one request. One request before we start this. If this episode or this series lasts for another 98 episodes, I request 303 for episode 303.
That's dope. All right.
I'm putting it out on the internet right now.
And they just got to drive their Kia's. Fans.
Just got to drive their 2007 Kia Souls with the hamsters. To Charlotte.
Yeah, those hamsters were dope, though. If you remember them correctly, they were very stylish. They like music.
You know who's more dope?
Who?
The Bronze Age.
Who? Yo,
Tom didn't even know where that was going.
There's so many wrestling things happening. So, yo, we do have the Bronze Age with us. We got Mike and Jesse. What's going on, gentlemen?
Hello. What's up?
Thanks for jumping on the... jumping on the bar down with us. This is good times. So I'm just gonna start at the beginning because I always love to hear about, you know, the influences that led you guys to coming together as a collective. So, you know, when the band started, you know, what were your biggest influences when you guys started, and like, is that kind of how you guys came together, or, you know, how did that work out?
There's a lot to unpack in that. the band itself has been around a really long time. As far as like, what, 5 years?
Yeah.
As a whole.
Yeah.
But like with Mike, it's been like 2.5 years or so. We kind of went from when I started the band, I was kind of into like, I don't know, like earlier kind of, like slower, like emo tunes, kind of
stuff you heard on Tooth and Nail.
Yeah, yeah, kind of in that realm. Yeah,
very like,
what'd you say?
As Cities Burn.
Yeah, yeah, like As Cities Burn style type of shit. And I guess after some member changes and stuff like that, we kind of landed. I'm a huge like influenced by Alexis on Fire. It's huge for me. And then I go to like the other end of it, and like Foo Fighters is huge for me. So those two kind of fell inside each other, and me and Mike kind of love the same shit.
Yeah, it definitely went more from like an emo band into like a rock band. It's just like a straight up and down like rock and roll, like Beer Drinkers and Hellraiser for rock.
Yeah.
It was funny because I was like listening to you guys over the last like few, like since you guys were announced on Bar Down. Yeah. And I was laughing because I was texting Mikey about it today. And I said, if these guys don't say that their biggest influence are like Emery and Thrice and Lexus on Fire and Armor for Sleep,
yeah.
I'm going to lose this bingo card.
Yeah. I mean, and that's another one I didn't throw in. Like Thrice is huge for me. I mean, Thrice has always been a very, very big influence for me.
Yeah. We did like a fucking, four favorite albums of all time, yeah. like during COVID, trying to create content or whatever, and have like each member of the band like post something on Instagram about their yeah. favorite record, and like it was pretty similar, but there's like one or two outliers for everybody, but everybody had Artist and Ambulance in their top.
Everybody,
four. Yeah,
yeah.
Tom and I did something similar yeah. at a Christmas party where we did a Mount Rushmore of musicians, and that was fun.
Hell yeah.
And I would argue about that.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. I don't know who the fuck I put in that line.
I don't know. I might not have remembered it as well as I thought I should have, but, you know, that's another story for another day. Right. Fun fact about Thrice, though, is I just got the artist in the ambulance their revisited version on vinyl. So now you know that.
Hell yeah.
Everybody. Now everybody knows it. It was from that. Urban Outfitters. Fuck it.
You sell out.
It's not as easy as it used to be. You can't just walk into a Hot Topic and like thumb through the bin and
shit.
Find like a $5 Newfound Glory picture disc and just walk out with it.
I can't do that
anymore. You know, now it's different times, baby. You got to revisit records in order to get them.
You had to go 300 copies of Adele to find it.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are burning in hell somewhere. So speaking of burning in hell, talking about Alexis and Fire, you know, really kind of those throat burning tunes, you know, that you guys have, you can kind of hear it a little bit in there. It's always kind of interesting to hear about where you guys came from, mostly because your music evolves over time. You know, you said you started kind of working on stuff like As Cities Burn, which couldn't be further from where you guys landed.
Yeah,
But, you know, that's kind of something to ask you guys, you know, just some commentary on it. You know, being a band as long as, you know, you guys have versus, let's say, a band like As Cities Burn, right? You kind of wonder how many times they might have wanted to kind of evolve and change, and their band did, you know, a little bit, but like, you know, who knows what they would have matured into if they hadn't found such like a huge amount of success with like that first record that was so dynamic at that time. So like, what would you say about like kind of a situation like that where, you know, you guys are, you know, let's say kind of in the middle of your life right now, when you guys land, you know, are you guys going to be haunted by where you started, or are you guys going to just embrace it and develop it?
I don't think you can be, you know what I mean? Cause like if you're writing music and you're writing music, honestly, at any point in time, you can write a song that means a world to you today, and tomorrow you're in a completely different place. And it still means, you know, you were still that person. And if you're embarrassed by that, then I understand that to a certain degree, but you just have to be honest. And if you are trying to do this to like gain popularity or notoriety, people pick up on that. And you know, you just kind of got to keep moving in an honest direction. And I think that as long as you're writing honest music, you can always look back and like reconnect with it in a certain degree and be proud of it for whatever reason that you have to make up in your head to be able to get through where you're at, to get where you're going. But I mean, Jesse and I are very similar, and like depending on what day of the week it is, we'll listen to God knows what kind of music.
Yeah.
So like,
you know, I was like, listening to Alanis Morissette on the way here.
So. Yeah. So
I think not to go off
you. No, go ahead. Yeah.
I think like when I think about times like that, I guess. So when I was originally writing music at the start of the band, I think that I had been doing the same thing for so long, writing the same style of music, that I wanted to kind of outreach and challenge myself to try stuff that was different from what I had normally done, or things like that and try to develop something. And I think that the more that I remembered why I played music in the first place was that we just started writing music, and whatever that music ended up sounding like, I knew that was completely from like our mental and our soul and our heart of like where we wanted songs to land. And that's kind of when I stopped caring so much about what we sounded like and what we were giving to. And I think that's like a big, you know, like a big moment you have to get to, is to like, this is just what we sound like. Like there's mm-hmm. nothing you can do about it. It's just the way we sound. Alexis on Fire is a great example of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how that band sounds. And if they change that, they're not going to sound like them. And mm-hmm. I think that, you know, that's a band that realized like, this is just who we are, and we're going to do it. You
yeah.
know?
I think, I mean, like, especially lately writing music, anytime we go into like work on something new or try to like carve out a path or a new song or something, like you really just get in the room, write music, and whatever the song wants to sound like, that's kind of yeah. where it starts to go.
Yeah. 100%.
And then you just kind of embrace it and let it take shape, you know? That's the one thing I think lately we've been doing a lot of, is just we like what we like. We have a specific like demographic that we're trying to appeal to and sound like, but we're not scared to kind of step outside of that box in a certain way to be able to pull something new in to mm-hmm. stay fresh. Yeah. So that we don't burn out, and then the listener's like, oh, this is the same song that they just released, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it's important to remember where you came from, know where you're going.
So I guess talking where we came from, you know, you guys are holding it down in Raleigh, and it's not too often that we get a guest from like the Raleigh scene on here. Honestly, I think the last one we had might have been Walt back at like episode 6 or 7. Like, it's been that long. Yeah. So, you know, it's a hop, skip, and a jump away from Charlotte where I am. But they're two completely different scenes with their own kind of like staples in the venues that they have there. So I guess, can you shine some light on what's happening in the Raleigh scene right now?
I mean, as far as like music goes, like I have been to our buddy Dylan is like booking again, like a lot. And he's using like School Kids Records, which is, you know, a small record shop. And I mean, every night of the week, almost, like the other night I went there, I went last night and there was probably like 40 kids. But then I went to a show like the week before and there was like 90 kids in there just listening to them. And they had never heard of these bands. I mean, School Kids is right by the campus.
Yeah.
So like they're like really pulling in a lot of like the younger, like college kids and stuff like that. So I think that place is going to be a really good spot for people to discover music. And then obviously, I mean, we always had the Poorhouse, like shout out that place. They've been good to us for so long, man. Yeah. And you can always catch a good show there. And I mean, the community is like really, really like coming together a lot recently. Yeah. I think it's really cool.
Yeah, the local hardcore scene is fucking booming.
Yeah,
right now.
It's
like going, there's kids going to shows that have never gone to shows. There's kids playing music that, you know, I almost feel like an old man when I see some of these kids playing music now, because it's like they're kids.
Yeah.
And it's awesome watching them like get their friends together, form a band, go play music that, like, you know, you're 18, 19 in your early 20s. The only thing you are at that point in your life is usually pissed off.
Yeah.
And for them to be able to like project that and have an impact on the community the way that they do and in the music scene, to like pull in 100, 200 kids, 300 kids. They do a lot of Monday night shows at School Kids with hardcore that Dylan books, and they just crush. Like, it's amazing to see people doing what they're doing right now, and I have the utmost respect for it.
Yeah, man. It's sick to see. Like, Dylan, man, he is Blind Path booking. Shout him out, man. He's a good friend of ours, and he's doing a really, really good thing for the scene right now, and it's really good to see, honestly.
So who's a Raleigh band that, you know, maybe our national listeners might not be aware of that needs to be on everyone's radar?
Fading Signal is Fading killing Signal, it in Raleigh right now.
They're crushing. They're hardcore.
Frontside, obviously,
yeah.
Old Sons is another band. I don't know if they're technically from Raleigh. They might be like Chapel Hill.
I think so. Area, I mean, it's close enough.
Dude, I don't know. We played a couple shows with them, and I've been to see them a couple times, and they like they're awesome.
Yeah,
like, Old Suns, S-U-N-S. They are phenomenal.
Great band. Great dudes. Great band.
Yeah.
Yeah,
check them out. If you guys haven't listened to them, definitely go listen to them. And Condado.
Condado.
Oh my god. Yeah, I love that band. But they're more like Greensboro area, right?
Yeah.
I was gonna say too. I think one of the cool things about Raleigh that I've seen that could also be attributing to like the younger audience going to these shows is that you guys have a functioning like School of Rock program.
Mm-hmm.
And for anybody who doesn't know what School of Rock is, it's essentially just like the movie. But it's like an after-school program where you can go and they'll teach kids how to sing, play guitar, play drums, play bass, and essentially form a band within them. But what's different that Raleigh does, and I don't see it, like we have a School of Rock in Orlando, and I don't see them doing this, is they'll actually get their School of Rock bands onto like local shows.
Mm-hmm.
So like you'll see these kids play with these punk bands, and they're getting involved in the scene in a way that's so much more different than showing up to a venue. Because I think like especially when I was growing up, like my mom was always a little bit kind of worried about putting me in like a CD venue watch a show for 3 hours,
right?
I'd come back covered in bruises, right? But I think like with that style of event, you get these kids when they're like 10, 12, like 13 or whatever, and they actually play in the venues, they meet the sound guys, they meet the bands, they're kind of like mentored by these bands. And you start seeing their friends come out, and it kind of like grows this scene from an after school program, which I think is the coolest fucking thing ever.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Super. I know that they did a St. Paddy's Day emo night thing on St. Paddy's, and they had the School of Rock open up the show, which I thought was really cool. Just a bunch of local bands, like really good bands. And the emo nights around here kill, like they crush. Yeah. People show up for those, they're awesome. And they had the School of Rock open it up, which I thought was amazing.
Super cool.
Because it's got to be funny because those kids, you know, are obviously probably in high school or middle school.
Yeah.
Like, their parents show up, and then it's just like a bunch of us like hanging out, and they're like, what the fuck is going on? You actually meet people like that, and you see how they like receive what your kids are doing, and they're like encouraging when they're not.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, this is actually like a very like healthy place to be, because these people aren't just like out here getting drunk and doing drugs and fighting and getting tattooed in the parking lot or, you know, doing whatever stereotype you think it is.
It's like, it does happen though.
Oh, for sure. That's my life, dude.
Can I ask a question? I mean, like, honestly, what does it take to be an emo night DJ? Like, what do you need?
All right, so
a playlist.
Legit. So
you need somebody's phone number.
You need a laptop.
All right.
Preferably a MacBook.
Okay, bingo.
You need one of the squeaky, squeaky things, you know, the digital ones.
That
you
All right. Crack. Okay.
You need a solid playlist.
All right.
You got to have some old heads.
All right.
Run it.
Okay.
You're good. Solid.
I've been to a handful. They always play the exact same playlist.
But, like, it's fun, man. I get like 6 beers deep, and I'm like, this is fucking awesome.
I just like, I wonder if like, I gimmicked myself. Like, I was like, all right, here's my deal. Like, I'm an emo night DJ, but I only play track 3 of any album you liked. And if it isn't track 3, then fuck off. You know, like, that's kind of like, that'll be my tagline. Like, if it isn't track 3, and then it'll be dot, dot, dot. Right. And I won't put fuck off, but like, the crowd will say it. I don't want to put fuck off, because that'll destroy the marketing team. We can't fucking have that happen. But I think I'm going to start building this. This is an enterprise I'm going to build. If you guys want to get in on the ground level, we'll talk after this. For sure.
Let me just tell. Okay. Tears. This is insane, because I just looked up 2 of my favorite albums to see what the 3rd songs are.
Yeah.
They're the best songs on the album. So Taking Back Sundays, Louder Now. Yeah. Make Damn Sure.
Okay. That's a good. Okay, so they won that one.
All right. Taking Back Sundays, Where You Want to Be. 3rd track is A Decade Under the Influence.
They also won that one. Okay, you're gonna win some.
Let me pull. You want? Do you want a Something Corporate? Say Anything. Let's do Senses Fail. Fuck it.
Yeah.
We'll do one more. All Let right. It Enfold You. 3rd track, Cute When You Scream.
Damn. You know, like, that sometimes it doesn't work. but sometimes it won't. Sometimes the best songs are going to be like 2 and 4. I feel like that's probably the way it is on like Yellow Card's Ocean Avenue. It's like, I'm going to play the song in between like Ocean Avenue and the other one with the other sad one.
You know what the third track of Ocean Avenue is?
Yeah. What? Which one is it?
Ocean Avenue.
See, fuck. Okay. But it's still going to be a gimmick. I mean, I could really fuck it up and like do something weird, like be like track 9. Because, like, you know, nobody does singles from track 9s, but that's too obvious. So, anyways, we'll retool it. It's fine.
I'd attend. I think it's a great idea.
From here on out, dude, we're only, like, if we release a record, we're only putting the single at number 3.
No, for real?
Releases a single is going on track 3.
You're
going
to get played at so many emo nights in 2043.
Track 1 and track 2 are both going to be separate intros. And the best song on the record is going to be track 3.
You're just, track 1 is just water, track 2 is the waterfall, and track 3 is song.
Dude, track 2 is going to be like that weird ASMR shit that people are into right now, where it's just like Jesse clicking his nails up against a microphone and whispering.
Dude, you know who was into that too? Under Oath on their Only Chasing Safety, because they did the thing where they did the fucking voice. I was like, 4, 3, 2, 1. And then it turned into fucking chaos. Because that's what Under Oath feels like to me still, to this day, is chaos.
Okay.
I love Under Oath so much.
Uh-oh. Their Only Chasing Safety is not a banger. The third one is not a banger.
Yeah.
It's The Impact of Reason, but it is between two bangers,
yeah.
A Boy Brushed Red and Reinventing Your Exit.
And that's what track 3 DJ is really all about. It's like,
I want to give that you one track on their only.
Yeah, I want to give you the sadness of it not being the one before it or after it. And I want that to plague you while you dance the night away. Like, I want you to booze more because of how it makes you feel. Like, that's the idea. Like, beer fucking bar owners are going to love it because, like, they're going to be like, all right, this next one, I know it's going to be awesome. And it's going to be like, this next track is from, like, Reggie and the Full Effect. And it's like a skit. And everyone's like, fuck! Just fucking throwing whiskey back. Dude, it's foolproof. This idea is foolproof.
That's actually kind of sick, too, because, like, when you do that, everybody goes outside of, like, smoke. And then they hear a song they want to hear, and they all come back in at the exact same time. It gives you a break. It gives
them
a break.
Everybody's
break. And that is the beauty of track 3, because, like, I want to hit them hard where it hurts, but I also want to draw them back in. So, you know, Jimmy Eat World, track 3, I know on Bleed American is the middle. If I put the middle on, everybody in a quarter-mile radius is coming in.
They're flooding back.
Because they want to fucking hear that guitar solo, you know, that fucking... Dude, best guitar solo from, like, 2001 that could have existed was that guitar solo. And it brings the people in.
I love how stoked you are about this. That makes me...
I love how he just, like, brainstorms these ideas in the middle of our episode.
This is not the first episode he's done this in.
But the point is...
Like, keep going, but you don't.
I feel like we need to take a vote. I feel like we need to take a vote on this right now and like pass it or like come back next week and try again.
This is an Instagram Live thing. He just needs to go on Instagram Live on like on the third day of the week,
stare into the camera like
fucking four and just go into a full TED talk about how the third song on every album on post hardcore albums it is arguably the worst song. But on emo pop punk albums, it is arguably the better song.
That is a dissertation. You could write 40 pages about that, take it to a college professor and say, suck it, and hand it to them. And they're going to be like,
you're not even enrolled in this college.
Yeah. And that's the first thing they're going to say is, you're like, sir, where did you come from? And why is this on computer paper from 1992?
Dude, they just see him walking up with like with the paper
peeling it.
The look on your face, they're like, oh shit, that's a manifesto. We're calling it an active shooter.
That's actually what would really happen. They'd look at the first word on it and they'd be like, yeah, that guy's crazy.
Track three? You're just playing like Shark Attack. Like, still talking to the cops, they're like, no, listen, this is what I'm trying to say.
just dying on a hill. That's it.
Track three.
I'm waiting for the transition. Where is it going, Tom?
I don't know.
Are we lighting the lamp during hockey season?
If I needed to think about a transition, I would have thought about one. But as soon as you said it out loud, it hurt me because I know that I didn't. But that's okay because I can think of one right now. Bronze Age. Bronze. Fuck those medals. Let's talk about gold medals, okay? So, no, let's actually talk about the Canes season real quick. And we're going to have a lot more to say about this. But first of all, congratulations. Yeah. Got out of the East. Ooh. Yeah,
not yet.
Almost.
Well,
we still got Toronto or Florida, which I mean.
Well, if you had Toronto,
I got my Flanagan's Cup.
That would be great, but yeah, Floridians, man, they just think they're the shit now. But
oh, that's fine. I mean, the funny thing is, like, if we play Toronto, like, there are enough rich people in Toronto that like come to Raleigh to go to the games.
Well, but Raleigh, the Canes do that thing where they won't let people outside of the Raleigh
zip code
buy tickets.
Get around
for,
it.
No, for South Florida, it was if you were outside, if you didn't have a zip code in the United States, you could not buy games. You could not buy tickets to the game.
Yeah. I don't know how people get around it because, I mean, like, you go to the games, especially like play the Islanders in the first round. I was at those games, and it's just there's Islander fans everywhere.
All right, so the thing that's different is those Islander fans live in Raleigh, like, and Charlotte. Because
Mikey's the one that gets about there.
I'm the one that gets
his head out is there. About to explode to get to tell you about this. Go! No,
I'm not even gonna do it,
dude.
But if you wonder why there's like an army of blue and orange at Canes games, it is Mikey. 100%, it is Mikey.
Oh, are you an Islander fan?
Yeah, so I run this thing called
Islander Fan
Isles Meetups that we have groups all over the country. And, you know, we have a group actually in Raleigh. They go to My Way Tavern once a month for games. So it's really just transplants from Long Island that live in Raleigh, live in Charlotte, live in Winston-Salem. And, like, during the regular season, we have hundreds of people that sit together for those games. But then in the playoffs, they cut us off, like, they won't let us do groups, but you know, they're still going to the games and there's tons of Islander fans that make it. But as you know, like pretty much all those Northeast teams, like when the Bruins play there, there's a ton of Bruins fans there, like Rangers play there, so you know, there's a reason why I moved to Charlotte. There's a reason why a lot of people move to Raleigh. Like, it's a pretty sick place to live, and it's not as affordable as it used to be, but it's still better than New York.
Long Island. Up until about 5 years ago, if any of the like major like franchises or original six teams came down and played, it was basically just a home game. I mean, we were terrible, and people weren't buying tickets, and you would go see the Bruins play in Raleigh, and they're probably, if it was, you know, if we played Arizona, there's probably like 8,000 or 10,000 people at the game. And if we play the Bruins, there's probably 15,000 people there, and 12.5 of them are Bruins fans. And it was absolutely brutal to go to games back then because we were terrible. And then you go watch them just get smacked by, you know, a team like that, and they come in and just run us out of the building as fans too. You know, between the Penguins, the Rangers, the Bruins, the Flyers, the Islanders, it's just like you just kind of got to swallow your tongue and walk in there and watch hockey and turn around and walk out. But you know, in the last 5 years, we've been a much better hockey team, actually, you know, built a hockey team in a city that embraces the team. And it's a lot of fun to go to games now, even, you know, a regular season game against somebody that's a, you know, a bottom feeder in the league. You go in and there's a ton of Hurricanes fans, and it's loud and it's rowdy, and it's a lot of fun to watch the guys go and play.
Yeah,
I agree. Like I was in the building, not this last series, but the one before COVID, when you guys swept us, and I was there game four when you swept us, and my whole view of Canes fans completely changed because, like, it was so loud in that building. People were so aggressive, and, like, I started to legit hate Canes fans. I was like, this shit sucked. Like, fuck the Canes. Like, I don't even hate the Ranger fans anymore. Like, I hate Canes fans so much. And like, it's good to see like hockey growing in non-traditional markets The only thing is, like, you know, yeah, the Canes have been good for, you know, these past 5 years. Every sport fan knows that those times don't always last. Like,
oh, yeah.
There's going to be some down times coming, maybe yeah. in a couple of years. Are those fans going to stick around and stick with the team? Like,
yeah, that, absolutely. You know, like, and going back to what you were saying, that game four when we swept the Islanders, that was like that time that, like, first year we made the playoffs, and that was like the pinnacle of my hockey, like going to, like, hockey Hurricanes memory, maybe. It's like we get in the first round, we go to Washington, we hadn't made the playoffs in like 10 years, 9 years. Go to Washington, lose two games in the first round, come back home. First time I'd ever been to a playoff hockey game. We win both games at home, go back to Washington, lose, come back to Raleigh, win, go back for game seven, win in overtime, and then coming home and sweeping the Islanders in four. And I remember being at that game four, and it was just like, I think I cried. Like, I'm pretty sure I cried when we won, where I'm like, this makes the, you know, last 8 years of my life is just sitting here watching us absolutely fucking suck. Feels so worth it, where it's just like, I think there's only two things that really give you that, and that's like music and sports, that like you can really embrace something that is so much bigger than you, than make it feel like it's your own. You know, like, we're sitting here talking about hockey teams of guys that we don't even know, like, we're fucking in the locker room, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think that's a staple of hockey fans. Hockey fans just are always like, are the wees, it's we and all that yeah. kind of stuff. But just like, if you wanted to talk about craziness, just think of my lineage, and I can then speak for Mikey's lineage because we grew up around the same time, is that we had to stomach the 2000s Islanders, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was a literal decade of shame.
Yeah.
Like, you got a literal decade of shame. And it's like, when we finally broke that mold and like started putting together some winners and all this kind of stuff, it was like the most refreshing thing in the world, because number one, you finally got to stop hearing Ranger fans, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, it got to that climax when, you know, the Rangers, you know, played the Kings with 2012, I think it was. And, you know, the Kings beat them. And then, you know, like, even I backed off after that, because I was like, that's heartache. You know, yeah. I mean, if we got to the Cup Finals and lost to a fucking shitbag West team, you know, fucking Vegas. Ugh. You know, yeah. No way. No, thank you. But like, I get it. But at the same time, that's the thing that made it feel so much better as an Islander fan, when you finally got good and you finally, you know, had the specters and all these people that, you know, are looking at, you know, the season and actually saying, well, we think the Islanders are going to come out of the East. And it's just like, holy shit. You know, it's yeah. great to feel that. But like all things, of course, it fades.
Yeah. I was going to say, too, like, you know, the Hurricanes had a decade of shit, too, honestly.
Yeah.
I think right after they won the Cup and the blackout happened, like, it was, what, 10 or 11 years of just slumping, dude. And it was like 2017 is when they started seeing a pickup again with the Hurricanes. But even, like, going back to, like, what you guys were saying about, you know, the attendance wasn't that great, and, like, the home teams and, you know, it felt like you guys weren't the home team, even though you were playing at like PNC.
Yeah.
What's crazy is that team, the Hurricanes, that franchise is the only North Carolina team to ever have an actual championship, like professional sports team.
Yep.
And people are so diehard about the Panthers. And like, at the end of the day, man, like, if you're looking at any type of like winning team or winning franchise, it's the Hurricanes in that state, man.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, I know a ton of people from around here that drive to Charlotte on Sundays to go watch the Panthers play. You know, like, they'll buy season tickets here and go watch the Panthers and could care less about hockey. And I don't really know anybody from the Charlotte, like, area that would buy season tickets to the Hurricanes and go see them. You know, even if it is, like, on the weekend we'll go see the Hurricanes when they're at home. You know, obviously 1 week a month with football is completely different when you're playing 2-3 games a week with hockey. But I don't know that many people that come in from Charlotte to see a Hurricanes game that are, like, committed to the team, that are, like, an actual fan of the team.
No, and I think it really is, like, a Raleigh fan base.
Yeah.
And, like, those, like, you know, the triangle. Like,
yeah.
That's the Hurricanes. And, you know, it is tough when there's down years, because there's competition for you know, college basketball, college football. Like, it's still the South. Like,
Raleigh is very much a college.
Like, yeah,
sports.
I would say North Carolina in general is a college sports state.
Like, everybody you know around here is, like, either a Duke fan, a Carolina fan, or a State fan, yeah, and or East Carolina fan, but I don't even really consider
that. It'll count.
But, like, everybody around here is a State, Carolina, or Duke fan, and will, like, fight you to the death about why they love that team. But then when the Hurricanes are playing well, none of that matters. It's just, like, everybody's a Canes fan, and it's really cool to see.
The best part about the Hurricanes is their beer is so good.
Yeah.
That Storm Brew?
Yeah.
It is probably one of the best, like...
How the hell have you tried it?
How to talk about
hot dude, every time we go to North Carolina, we buy a six-pack, dude. We were pounding them before the Aberdeen show.
Not better than Barn Rocker.
Yeah.
We bought a 12-pack of it at Harris Teeter. Yeah. And yeah, we went to the Aberdeen show. We were just pounding them back. It is one of the most drinkable...
Yeah.
Beers,
yeah,
that's like a lager pilsner type of beer. It is so good.
Yeah,
it's probably just Lion's Head.
No, it's better than Lion's
Head. That's what they want you to think.
It's a Steel Reserve. Lion's Head. It's watered down Steel Reserve.
It's delicious, delicious watered down Lion's Head from me to you.
But I wish all hockey teams did that. I mean, Toronto, all they got is John Tavares' shitty cereal.
Yeah. Banana flavored.
Are they winning right now, or are they about to get bounced? I think that I know that Florida went up in the first period.
Florida was up until, like, literally a minute ago. Toronto just tied it. So,
who scored? Was it Mitch Marner? It probably was that
Nylander.
Isn't it so much worse?
Was it? Who was it?
Nylander.
I was Nylander. He's a wiener too.
Isn't it so much worse if Toronto
they're all wieners
right at home instead of just getting swept in Florida.
Do you know what's awful is that I had to Google the Florida Panthers and I pulled up an actual fucking Wildcat.
That's what's always
not
come
even
up
the
first,
team
because it's always a problem in Florida. Like, you're always getting the red alert first. It's like, oh, you Googled Florida Panther, red alert. Like, the panther that's closest to you is not attacking you. Like, don't worry. Now to the hockey.
Wait, there's legit still Florida Panthers? I thought they were all gone.
No, they're endangered, dude. They're basically cougars, pumas, mountain lions. They're all the same shit. There's, if they're
cougar
in Florida,
in the car,
it's a
buddy.
Florida Panther.
Damn, that's crazy.
And if they're in Miami, they're just 50 years old. And looking for a good time.
That's a badum tiss, you know.
Yeah,
love that.
Yeah, Florida Panthers and Florida Cougars.
We should.
Isn't that so much worse for, like, Toronto and Toronto fans? So that if they win Game 4 in Florida, go back to Toronto just to get beat in front of their home fans tonight.
I kind of hope that happens.
I hope it happens too. Just go back to Florida.
Anything? And there's part of me that wants to pull for Florida with, like, as many ex Hurricanes as they have on the team. With Eric being on the team and Mark both, like, and I wish that Eric would have come back to Raleigh at some point and kind of had his farewell tour, but it's awesome to see him still playing hockey.
Mm.
And I would love to see him come back to Raleigh next round and get absolutely fucking smoked.
Did you guys ever get the chance to see the Stahl mom?
The Stahl mom?
Yeah. Eric Stahl's mom or the Stahl brothers' moms?
I don't think I've ever met their parents at all.
So, I used to work for Vans years ago. We opened the store in Raleigh and she came out to an event and you knew who she was because at the time, like, she had two jerseys sewn into one.
Yeah.
And it was a Pittsburgh jersey and a Carolina jersey. And on the back, it just said Stahl, but it was, like, split perfectly for the letters.
That's cool.
And she would just wear that around and go to Vans events.
Yeah, she would just go around because she was just promoting her.
Give
boys,
me free Vans.
All four kids and fucking the pros, basically.
She sounds terrible.
I had these three motherfuckers. Four, technically.
I was at the game that they
could have been her own front line.
Give me free Vans, please.
With Jordan and Eric, and they had all three Saul brothers on the top line that one night. And I don't think that they played New York that night when Mark was still playing with New York, but they had all three Stahl brothers on their top line one night. And then right after that training camp, they had, like, a preseason game, like the red and black game, and Jared got in a fight with Tim Gleason, and then they release them like the next day, like in a pre, like in an intramural like scrimmage.
It's kind of show.
The only thing I hate more than having all Stahl brothers on the same line are the Sedins.
Oh god, dude, I'm not a like. Seeing how Vancouver treated them after they lost to the Bruins in that Stanley Cup made me like hate the Vancouver Canucks like fan base. Like it was just like they, I mean, the Canucks have been bad for a long time, and then like the reception they got after that, or like fought and clawed, and then Tim Thomas does Tim Thomas in the cup. But yeah, I don't know. I've always had like a weird feeling towards the Canucks fan base after that.
Well, every time they lose the Stanley Cup, they burn down the whole city.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's just like
that was the second time.
Yeah. It's insane. It was insane to me to see that. Like, yeah, it's like I don't know. It just felt like they were children, where you just like take something away from them, and they just like poof and throw it at you.
When was it? 95 when the Rangers won, beat the Canucks.
95 or 96. That was the year that Messier went absolutely nuts in the playoffs.
Yeah, watch that. Those riots. They were flipping cop cars and setting them on fire. It was disgusting. Yeah. But then you realize they all have universal health insurance and you can do stupid things like this.
Even though it'll take you 9 months to get your broken arm set.
At least they don't have to pay $60,000. Exactly.
You don't have to pay like $6,000 per crack.
Your arm will just look like this for another 8 months.
I think that's what the Canadians hope. Like, I think the Canadians are just generally hoping like, well, you know, it's not too bad, eh? You know, it's just as like his elbow is out of place a little bit, eh? So, he'll never go to the doctor. And like most of these guys, like they're not never going to go to the doctor because like Canada is one of those places that, like, believe it or not, a lot of that area is still mostly like weird sheep herders and like fucking cattle wranglers and shit. It's just like that is like the wild, wild west up there with some of them. Prairie Canadians.
Yeah, I was just saying. Yeah, Kyle from Crease Rule just building a hockey rink out in the middle of
nowhere. Who does that?
In
the middle of an episode of Bar Down Breakdown, they're building a hockey rink.
Like who?
You can hear the soft.
Like who does that? And like
Canadians.
And why would you put yourself on film doing that? Maniac Canadian, fucking maniac. No way.
But we're having a blast, but we do have to fill you in on our homies DraftKings real quick. So light the lamp there in the hockey playoffs or DraftKings Sportsbook. Right now, new customers can make a $5 bet and score $150 in bonus bets instantly. So we're waiting on the finish of the Panthers and Maple Leafs game, and we're hoping for a great Panthers and Canes series to throw down some money with DraftKings. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and sign up with code THPN. New customers can make a $5 hockey playoff bet and score $150 in bonus bets instantly. That's code THPN only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In Massachusetts, call 1-800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelpline.com. Or in New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. 867-369. In Kansas, call 1-800-522-4700. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort, 21 and older in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details and state-specific responsible gambling resources. All right. Are we going right into it?
Let's face it, guys. With coffee,
fucking ad read.
No, we're not done yet. But let's face it, guys. With coffee starting at $5, and that's without all the laundry list of things that you add to it, and our bank account somehow always depleting. We're officially entering a dupe session. Most products do the same thing, but they're priced completely different just because they got the name of some hip hop artist in the 90s. So. A good duplicate or a dupe is crucial for getting the highest quality at the best price. One dupe you definitely shouldn't sleep on, Raycon wireless earbuds. Raycon is premium audio at the perfect price point, so you can listen to what you want when you want it without breaking the bank. or taking a break because they have such a long battery life. Raycon's mission is to prove that you shouldn't have to pay an arm and a leg for quality sound and essential smart tech listening features. You can get a pair and a spare and another for your au pair and still pay less than you would with some of the other more big name tech companies out there. Raycon knows that in this economy, every purchase needs to be perfect. They offer buy now, pay now later options. And right now you could pay as low as $18 at checkout. They even have easy and free return guarantee. They offer 2 years of product protection insurance just for a few bucks. They offer free domestic shipping and a flat fee for international shipping. And they have over 50,000 five-star reviews, including some of their, you know, obvious additional features that include noise isolation, three customizable sound profiles so you can listen to your emo, your post-hardcore, and your death metal all in different equalizations. And they're even water resistant. So when you're at that show and you don't want to listen to that one band that's playing and you're sweating, they don't fall out of your ears. Go buy Raycons. Go to buyraycon.com/THPN today. That is /THPN today to get 15% off your order. That's buyraycon.com/THPN to score 15% off. Buyraycon.com/THPN. Mikey has them. He loves them. What's your favorite thing about your...
I do love them, but I don't own them because they're my wife's. But she says that they sound great and they're super comfortable. So use that code THPN, baby.
The Ryan household owns a pair.
The Ryan household. And she doesn't approved. Let me use good ones. As you can see, I'm using these Apple earbuds.
The free ones.
The free ones. But before we dive into a little more Bronze Age, I just have one more Canes question. You know, this past season, you guys had your Winter Classic game or the Stadium Series game.
Yeah.
Were you able to attend it?
Yeah, that was the longest day of my life. Absolutely.
Let's hear it. So the good, the bad, the ugly.
No, so we were season ticket holders. My dad was able to get season six tickets. So, me and my buddy went, Chris Roy, shout out to him. And then my sister and her husband went, and my mom and my dad went, and the gates opened at like 2 o'clock. Me and him just went and got his girlfriend to drop us off. We had like a case of beer apiece, walked into the parking lot and just kind of started hanging out. We both took an Adderall before we got there, and shit, you know, dude, we probably crushed anywhere between like 20 to 25 beers while we were there the whole day. Like, it was unbelievable. And my parents got there like at 1:30 to park, and they didn't get parked until probably like 5 o'clock.
Jeez.
Sat on the interstate for the ever, basically. But everybody got part. My sister was able to get in. We all hung out, and just it was awesome seeing like all the festivities and all the it was. I've never seen that many people at a hockey game ever, or really anything. Maybe like a Panthers game, but it's such a smaller like setting that like having that many people crammed in together. But we were able to get in and watch the game, and we sat like lower level, kind of out like in the corner behind the goalie. It was one of the best experiences I've ever had in my life. It was so much fun, especially beating the Capitals the way we did. It was an absolute blast. I hope they do it again somewhere. It's one of the things I would definitely drive for. Like, it's such an experience that if your team plays an outdoor game, don't think about it. Just go. It is amazing.
Yeah, it sounds like traffic on like the state fair days. Like, I remember one season, the Islanders and the Canes had the season opener the same weekend as the state fair opener.
Yeah.
And because like the fairgrounds, the college stadium and PNC Arena are all there together.
All like in a mile radius.
Yeah. Dude, traffic was a nightmare. Like, so many people, just like your parents, were trying to get to the tailgate at like 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon for a 7 o'clock game. And barely made puck drop just because it was crawling that bad.
Yeah. If you can imagine that times like a million, I would say that's what the outdoor game was like. It was like, I know people that sat out on the side of the road for like between 5 and 7 hours to get in. And it was just like crazy. I don't know how they dealt with it. Like, I know my dad, my dad's the least impatient person I've ever met in my entire life. And like, my mom was telling me when they parked, he was like, your dad's pretty much settled it. Like, we're not going to see the game. We're going to just come in, turn around, and go home. He's canceling his tickets for next year. Fuck that. Never wants to come back ever again. They did this so poorly. And, you know, once he gets sat down and has, like, a beer, he's fine. But just, like, anything. Yeah, it was atrocious. But it was – I mean, you kind of almost have to expect it with the way that they had it set up where you got a college – and then, like, on the fairgrounds, even when the fair's not happening, they still have, like, events and stuff going out there in those buildings. So, like, the fairgrounds, the college, and the stadium all share the same parking.
Yep.
It's just – yeah, it's absolutely insane.
Yeah. So, you know, I think Carolina getting and pulling it off, like, you know, because it's not necessarily cold in the wintertime here in the Carolinas.
Yeah,
is just going to open up, you know, paths for other, you know, southern teams to maybe get one. Like,
I mean, Florida's supposed to be next.
Yeah, I don't know how they're going to pull that off, but like, it's
either going to be at Raymond James or Hard Rock, so we'll see.
Jeez, that's bonkers to me to think like an outdoor game in Florida, but
they did it in L.A. at Dodger Stadium.
But L.A. doesn't get like too hot. Like L.A. is like always like 80 degrees.
If they did like a Tampa, Florida outdoor game, that y'all might could fill up like half the fucking stadium. That would be insane.
We could Taylor Swift just packed out Raymond James. I don't know if the Lightning are going to be able to do it.
They would.
Lightning and Panther fans, 100%. I think
it would be big enough that it would be like absolutely. Yeah.
Because they've sold out football stadiums before, like Buffalo, like a lot of the original stadium series ones happened in NFL arenas.
Yeah, I mean, specifically the Lightning like fan base and the Panthers fan base.
I know a lot of people that went to the stadium series that were fans of like other teams, Ranger fans and Penguin fans, like transplants to come down here. That
yeah, out. Like to be honest with you, like I would like if they announced like it at Raymond James, like I would try to get tickets and I would like go on all my Islander shit, you know, like
yeah. Be the odd man out.
Just like, you know, not like not caring, but like I'd be one of those people who would just come just because they're a hockey fan.
Yeah.
You know, seeing how the ice holds up in Tampa, Florida.
And it's like it's almost like a religious experience. It's like seeing the game played in that big of a setting. And until you see it, I don't think you really can understand it. But it was like just the appreciation for the game and then seeing it on that level was very eye opening. For sure.
You know, I watched so much hockey when I was growing up and watched so much baseball from like one part of the stadium.
Yeah.
Where like the first time I had ever gone to like a football game, like in my adult life, like I was like brought back by like the enormity of it. Like I was like, holy shit, like this is insane, and like you're just not used to it, and you're right, like seeing that enormity like with something you love that's like a little baby to you, like hockey.
Yeah,
sign me the fuck up, man, let's do it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's cool. Like when I first started going to Hurricanes games, I was the only person I knew that liked hockey. Like me and my dad had season tickets to the Ice Caps growing up, which was like the first hockey team in the Triangle area. And then like I got a little bit older, like it was baseball, football, basketball for me. Mm-hmm. Now it's funny, like seeing so many friends of mine that like I didn't like take the games or anything, just get into hockey, and then we all, like, share that together. We're like, we'll get together and watch hockey games, and it's fun to like see everybody find it in their own way. But
yeah, of course,
that, like 10 years ago, where it's like I was, you know, watching a hockey game, and everybody's like, why do you care about that? And I'm like, I really don't. Fucking
terrible.
Yep, exactly. It's just depressing as shit to watch right now. Like maybe we win tonight, and if I do, like I'm not gonna feel that good about it.
Yeah,
I feel like 25 points out of a playoff spot, but watching it grow and become what it is now is a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. There's so many people that care about it.
Yeah, of course.
It's crazy to see.
Amen.
Well, it'd be cool too because this is the first time you'll get a new pennant in the stadium. I mean, whether or not they go to the Stanley Cup or not, like you guys are going to get a first pennant for winning the Metropolitan for the first time ever this season.
Yeah. Well, we won it last year and this year.
Yeah. And it was this year only.
Do I know?
No, I've totally forgot what year it was. I was like looking up like the stats really quick. Forgot what year it was.
That's why you shouldn't do research. Just wait, I know, right? And make shit up.
Yeah, just make shit up.
Yeah, nah, it works really well for me.
Yeah, Tom made up a whole entire roster. The dude from Judah and the Lion. We were totally out of our element talking to Judah and the Lion in the first place. And then Tom just made up literally the entire roster of Colorado. And the guy was just like so nice. And he was just like, yeah, those guys aren't on our team. Like,
it was bad news.
He literally was looking at someone's like Yahoo fantasy hockey team.
It wasn't that bad. It was pretty bad though.
Ever since then, we don't do research.
No, I was on Cap Friendly. And somehow, instead of clicking on the Avalanche, I clicked on like Avalanche, like 2023 draft if I drafted. And like, that's why I was like, oh, good. And you have like Nemestikov and Spolestikov. And he was like, no. Not them though, and I was like, "What am I gonna do? What am I gonna do now?" But we recovered. We did all right.
Oh
man!
Well, we need to have a list of rules for this show.
Nope, never. But boys, I do, before we let you go, want to talk a little bit about Bar Down Breakfast. To be completely transparent, like, you guys came onto my radar because of the festival and have instantly become like one of the bands I'm most excited to see. So like, I guess fill me in on your relationship with like Christian, because I know that you guys went through Christian and the Seneca Boys. Like, have you played a bunch of shows with them in the past? And like, when he reached out to you, it was a no-brainer kind of deal?
Yeah, I don't think we've played like a super huge amount with those guys, but
probably two or three shows.
Two or three, but we did Milestone with them. I think that was Family, right? Welcome to Family Fest. Yeah. It was the first time, I think. And then we did Winston-Salem with them at that fucking free bar or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I opened a show by myself, acoustic, for them like a couple of weeks ago at the Poorhouse here. And yeah, I mean, they – I don't remember getting hit up to play it, but
yeah, it was funny. Like, again,
oh, by the way, you guys are playing it.
They're just put on the flyer.
Through like a member change. We've gone through a member change in like the last couple of weeks, and we're sorting all that out. And me and Jeff were like, let's shut it down, let's figure it out. And like, you know, we'll be back on the road in no time. And I woke up and it was like Bar Down Breakdown tagged you in a post. And I open it, it's just a lineup. We're on the lineup. I texted Jesse, hey, did you confirm this show in June? He's like, no, I thought you did. And I was like, yeah, we're just on this flyer.
Classic. He said, she said.
Christian, I found out Christian was involved with it, and I hit up Christian. I was like, hey, who confirmed this? He's like, Jesse. I was like, when did you say that? He's like, oh, last time I talked to you guys when we played together, Jesse said y'all are good for it. And I was like, oh, okay. I was like, oh, okay, cool. Yeah, sounds good.
Can we use this tactic for year three? Just like put like fucking Taking Back Sunday, playing Long Island Bar Down Breakfast.
Year three, we're throwing.
They have to show up and play it.
I mean, imagine that, like Adam Lazar just being like, ugh.
I guess we gotta play it. And like, put us like, on there.
Kind of like stumbles up and all sad and stuff. And he's
but
like,
we're specifically, on the show. we put like the like Decade Under the Influence, Make Damn Sure lineup, Taking Back Sunday. So like Fred Maraschino gets the notification. Oh, I guess I gotta do it.
Yep, he like flies in, poor guy, and he's like, well. I'm here now.
Yeah, it was the one with the color Fred. It's Taking Back Sunday.
It was one of the shows we wanted to play. Like, knowing that you guys just took care of all that for us was very, very thoughtful.
Yeah, we took care of putting your name on the flyer and notifying you, too.
I mean, I guess we're playing, but no, it's a ton of great bands, so I was like, fuck it, man. If we said yes or no, we're definitely saying no on the fucking flyer.
I think it's just kind of like if Frontside said you were a good band, like we just automatically started tagging you and shit.
I trust Walt 60% of the time, so we'll just bang
Walt him. Being super weird, just being like, you know, it's cool, lizards and shit, and you're like, oh, great. Gotta tag lizards and shit now.
Dude, just put them on the show.
I gotta tag lizards and shit.
Dude, just do it.
Dude, what are you talking about?
Dude, just
what are you talking about?
Merrillat.
Merrillat.
What a guy.
The best though, like, we had Walt on very, very early in Bar Down Breakdown when Devin, who's like the most Long Island dude ever, was also our co-host. And for like the first 20 minutes, Walt's talking and Devin texts me and he just goes, "Dude, I can't understand what this dude is saying." Because he's like so Long Island and had like never spent any time in the South. And he was just like, "Dude, I don't know. Like, I truly don't know what this man is saying."
That was the same thing happened to Walt with our drummer Tony, because I have to be very specific with the Tonys. You guys will find out in June. Yeah. So the drummer Tony, he goes up to Walt. And he goes, "Hey, man, you know, thanks for being such a good sport." Walt's like, "What are you talking about?" And he's like, "Well, because you know, everyone's like making fun of the way that you say Miller Lite, and you know, thanks for just being a good sport and going around with it." And he goes, "That's a fucking joke." He goes, "I just say it like that because it's funny," and Tony loses it because he thought that we were making fun of him.
Yeah,
and no, like we were in on like the whole joke the entire time, because he was just, every time we would ask him, like, "Hey, Walt, what do you drink?" He'd be like, "Miller Lite." So that was just the whole joke.
Yeah.
And it was the way he ran with the bit, and Tony had no idea what was going on until he asked him, and he was just being so genuine about it.
That's a fucking joke.
Hey, when we were in the studio working with him, I like developed the ability to like talk just like him. Like everybody in the band was like, "You sound just fucking—" I can't do it anymore. I haven't done it in years, but they're like, "Dude, you sound just fucking like him. Like, do it in front of, like, talk to him like that and see what he says." He like came outside at one point, and I was like smoking a cigarette, and he walked over to me. He asked me a question, and I responded to him in his voice. And he just turned around and looked at me, and he's like, "Is that what you think I sound like?"
That's it.
Everybody in the band is like, "Dude, that's exactly what you sound like." He's like, "You ain't smoked enough Marlboro Reds to sound like me."
Sounds good, dude. We tried the entire tour to try to get him to do like trucker talk, like if he was talking in the on the intercom, just because we found out he was like an
actual career.
Yeah, he was a fucking truck driver, dude. Can you imagine that breaker turn four, just like a lot. Like, dude, I wanted him to say something like that so bad, and we just never were able to get him to do it. So I'm gonna try to get him to do it at the Milestone.
Dude, I told him one time, I was like, "I wouldn't pay any amount of money to be like sitting shotgun in your truck and just watch you have like an old shit moment coming down a mountain and just have to like downshift real quick and just see what you say. Any amount of money to see you react like in real time, like how you actually do that, what you actually say."
Now he's hand wiring amplifiers.
Yeah. Scary.
I think that's scarier than cross-country truck driving, honestly, because
I don't know. I kind of want him to build me a fucking amp. I think
those capacitors, if you oh man, that thing can kill you, man. That thing,
yeah, that'll actually kill you.
That'll actually kill you.
Yeah, like a couple of times. It's like, dude, fuck. You know?
All right. Well, now that we got it out of the way that you guys are indeed playing Bar Down Breakfest, let's just chat about.
At the very least, we'll be there to DJ track reset. We'll just play the song on our record and let it fly. That'll be the favorite.
You guys, you know, it's really funny. You guys are looking at Mikey right now, thinking he's having like a grand old time. In his mind, he is furious. He's furious that this announcement of you guys being on Bar Down Breakdown Fest didn't go exactly how he wanted it to go. Dude, he is internally furious.
I'm
right
also
now.
Just wondering what other bands we've been tagging for like the past 2 months.
I would laugh so hard if Never Home just didn't even know that they were having a reunion show. They just
a mix of internal fury and internal panic, because like half of Mikey's just like, "Oh no, did I literally just start tagging bands and none of them know that they're supposed to play?
Is
oh
Pernway
my
actually
God,
gonna play
I'm
this?
Gonna die." And like the other half is just time. Like,
only just, out of time shows up.
I'm the only at this is Austin Seneca Burns.
Put him on the flyer, dude. Fuck it.
Yeah. Listen, as long as you can just play like a full cover of Emery songs, then you're fine.
Yeah, we might figure out one.
We might do that.
Happens. Ponytail Parade is one of the long ones.
Let's get it. We'll do something off the new record that nobody knows. Yeah, everybody's like, this
can't suck. We'll just so everyone thinks that like might be your song, but like isn't sure.
Just an Emery song.
You ever done that? You ever like been to a show and you're watching a band and like they play a cover, but they don't say that they're playing a cover, and like you're like, oh, I think I recognize that song, but like you aren't sure, and then they like play their own original, and then it's like lost forever. Has that ever happened to you?
Oh, welcome to an out of time show.
there's one band locally, I won't say their name, but there's one band locally that I've seen two or three times. And I shit you not, there's like five or six songs in their set that are straight up covers. Oh. They steal like everything and change the lyrics. Yeah. Like same everything. And I'm hearing it and I'm like singing a different song in my head, but I'm like, that's not what he's saying. And I think they're doing a cover and they might be like doing a play on it. They're like, yeah, we wrote that one. And I'm like, are you fucking joking or are you being serious? Because it's funny if you're joking. Like, it's hilarious. But they're like dead serious about it. Like, they're like, we heard this song, we thought it was cool, so we just did it our way. And I'm like, no, you just did that song.
New lyrics. I had a friend that did that. He goes, dude, we wrote like the best acoustic song ever. And I go, yeah. And I was like, send it to me. And he sends it to me. And I was like, I'm humming it in my head. I'm just like, I'm like, I know this song. And it was fucking Jumper by Third Eye Blind. And I called him out on it. I go, dude, you like that is 100% a Third Eye Blind song. He goes, no, dude, it wasn't. I go, where did you come up with the idea? He goes, oh, we were just jamming it. I go, no. What were you watching? Like, you were watching a movie or something. He goes, oh, we were watching Yes Man. And I go, oh, yeah, the part where Jim Carrey is singing Jumper to the guy that's going to jump off the roof? Yeah, you definitely took Jumper from that song. Dude, the chord progression, the melodies, everything was Jumper. And I'm like,
God.
So I don't trust people anymore.
Fuck it, man. I'm going to start doing it.
I'm going to start doing it and just start watching Jim Carrey movies.
Fuck, man. Writing records is fucking hard.
I think like if you
and thanks for checking out Spittin' Chiclets. All right, we'll talk to you guys later.
If you say that you are gonna be like a heel band, like specifically like made of bad guys, like then you should be able to steal music from people as much as you want. Because like,
would it not be funny if like the band that opened up Bar Down Breakdown Fest just played like one of each band's song?
Like, I would love
that. And like totally stole your fire. Like,
hits. Like when we open up for a national, I always want to cover their biggest song. In my head, I'm like, how mad would like what would they actually do if we just played do? Like if we open up for Taking Back Sunday, we just played Make Damn Sure. Like, thank you guys for coming out. You might know this one, and we just play into it. And they're like, yo, like what the fuck? I can't do this.
I know how funny secretly
that's literally like walking to the ring to face Hulk Hogan and wearing yellow and red. That's like, bro, you're going to get fucking smashed.
He's going to be livid.
My dream, though, is to open for Newfound Glory and close our set with My Friends Over You.
100%.
Do you know how, like, okay, one, it would be one of the greatest bits ever pulled.
You get so much heat, dude.
But two, oh my God, we would never play a show ever again.
No.
And people would ask us like, oh, what happened? Or we close our set with My Friends Over You. Oh, why? Well, it was a Newfound Glory headliner.
And Jordan got super mad and he like told all the Florida promoters. He
came out on stage and we were really excited about him and he punched Mike in the face.
Dude, are you kidding me? If Mike got punched in the face by Jordan, he'd get that black eye tattooed on him.
He already has a tattoo by Jordan.
No, but like, dude, if you got a black eye, like he would, you know, he'd be like,
that'd be his only face tattoo.
Yeah. But like, oh, I just knocked my headphones back. Well, guys, it's getting pretty late. Blah, blah. No, thank you so much for actually being with us and hanging with us. And I have one more quick question for you just about, you know, some of the new music you've been writing. So, you can kind of tell like from when I started this conversation, I just love hearing about like inspirations and beginnings and stuff like that. So for like the new music that you're writing, do you have like a vision for how you're going to present it? Are you going to present it as like a, like one collection of music or like singles or something like that? And where do you find yourselves taking inspiration from it now, the way you guys are writing now?
Throughout our entire
career as a band, we've done nothing but really singles. We did an EP that was supposed to release, and then COVID hit.
Mm-hmm.
And we ended up doing it as nothing but just a of singles.
Because,
mm-hmm. you know, the industry is going really towards, like, single mentality stuff. But I also think that I'm that other side of the thought process that I'm like, yeah, well, everyone's doing singles, but, like, you know, records are still, like, to me, an important thing in music. Like, I could, like, when Alexis on Fire put out The Otherness, like, I couldn't wait to go, like, listen to it and go buy the vinyl and, like, have it in my hands. Same with, like, Thrice and stuff like that. Like, I mean, I'm older, though, so, like, for me, it's, like, still that thought of, like, when I was a kid, getting my allowance, going to the fucking record store, and figuring out, like, what I was going to spend my fucking $10 on, like, mm-hmm. which I was going to get this week. And I think that music is turning, in my head at least, I think that it's turning to a place where records are going to become important again for that reason, because there's so much fucking music being pumped out into the world that you can only attach to something so much emotionally if you're getting rapid fucking speed.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But if you put out a record that has a sentimental value, like we went to a fucking the studio or a fucking cabin or whatever, and we wrote a record in that moment, how we felt in that exact moment, and we put out two or three singles and we do it old school, and then we drop a fucking record and give something to people that means something that they can hang on to, that they can hold with their hands, put in their car, put on their fucking record player, like, pedestal display thing or whatever. Like, in my head, that makes fucking sense. So I want to write a record, but I think it's really, like, right now we're just, like, trying to figure out what is the best way to do it. But I want a fucking record.
Yeah.
So that's my thought process. I want to give something to people that gives them some type of, like, I want people to feel involved, like, emotionally attached to something, I guess you'd say. Like, I'm emotionally fucking attached to Alexis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, sure.
And is like, it's a part of me. I mean, I have tattoos on my body. And like, that band is a part of me. And I think that's a thing that, like, a lot of people don't. I can ramble about this forever, so sorry. But
it's great.
I think a lot of people in this day and age have really forgot what it's like to love a band and not just love, like, a release or a single, and love, like, what's happening at that moment. Like, I want a band that people remember what it's like to love a band, to be like, no, that band's dropping a record, I can't fucking wait, I know the date, it's in my phone, on my calendar, or wherever I can to get it, because, like, this band is a part of me. Like, I want it to be more a part of them, as much a part of them as it is, like, a part of us, if that makes sense, you know.
Yeah, no, that makes plenty of sense. And I think you hit the nail right on the head, you know, when you're talking about how, you know, a lot of listeners have moved away from listening to, you know, entire records and, you know, entire, like, cohesive pieces of music to a lot of singles and stuff like that. And it's kind of transforming the way people are listening to music again. It's almost like, you know, back in like the 50s and 60s, when, you know, everything that came out was, you know, you heard it on the radio and then you went out and bought the single and it maybe had a B-side and, you know, maybe you listened to that B-side a little bit, but you just wore that A-side out. And, you know, I think that's the way it was then. And, you know, even, you know, when the Beatles were putting out full length records, I think that was still a little bit alien to people, just because people were still expecting those singles and stuff. So now, you know, the world transitioned through the 60s and the 70s through, you know, a lot of rock and roll artistry, you know, bands like, you know, Pink Floyd and Led Zeppelin and, you know, Genesis and all that kind of stuff, where it was like art now. So everything was presented in an album, you know, Dark Side of the Moon and, you know, Led Zeppelin 2 and Led Zeppelin 4 and all that kind of stuff that was presented as like one big piece of art.
Yeah.
And then you moved into pop bands in the 90s, and then things started getting segmented again, where, you know, there was grunge that was still presented as art, but there was pop music that was all singles and, you know, bubblegum stuff. And then they put out that weird, like tiny cassette player, if you remember, that played like 30 seconds of like a really scratchy, terrible single. But like you listen to it because it was the Spice Girls or some shit. Like music really is cyclical and it's funny like that. But Fushu Mang, great record. Yeah. Love that shit. If I could own every record, I would. Like yeah. Matt fucking Pinfield probably does. Like he probably owns every record.
Yeah, 100%.
I don't know. Like, I wish I had Matt Pinfield money so I could just have every record.
I don't know. I think it's just like, I think it's like, if people talked about it more and like, I think just let people remember what that was. Like, I mean, like when, you know, like I always think about like another like huge band for me is like Seosin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When they bought their self-titled,
God, yeah.
I had to buy fucking four of those fucking CDs because it never left my fucking car and it just spun in that motherfucker.
Mm-hmm.
Ruined that fucking CD four,
oh, yeah.
four fucking times. And I still have all four of them. And I have all the DVDs and I have all the shit because when you discover, you know, music like for me, like that's the dream. Like you want people to discover your
yeah, of course,
for themselves
and yeah.
and own it in their own way. You sure. know what I mean? Like, and I think that, you know, singles are cool and I love when bands drop singles and I think that's great too. Mm-hmm. But I think, or I hope, I guess I hope that like the world will turn back to a time where those things meant something to like hold in your hand.
Yeah.
You know, like I think that's so cool.
And you know, when you think about alternative music, like the other half of it is going to shows. And how many kids are going out to see bands after a single or two? Like you're not going out and really getting involved in your local scene
for sure.
if a band's not putting out albums.
Yeah.
And I go through stages where I'm like, oh, you know, it's smart. This band is releasing just a bunch of singles and they're getting all these like Spotify streams. And then I'm like, yeah, but no one's going to their shows. Like what's the point then if you're just like internet popular? Like that's not what this music scene's about.
The only thing the industry cares about is how many butts can you put in seats? You can have 10 million album streams. That's amazing. Like the check from Spotify looks great, whatever. But then you go play a show in your hometown and there's nobody that shows up. And it's like, I will take any day of the week having absolutely zero like recognition online or anything, but just get in a van, drive across the country, play a show, and there's people that give a shit watching you play music. Like that's, I will trade that out for any type of notoriety any day because it's just like, When you start playing music, that's what you want to do is you want to get out and go play music. You don't really give a shit about your friends telling you you're cool. I mean, it feels, but like that's not why you do what you do if you're doing it. And I feel like that's lost on a lot of people nowadays, where it's just like they try, they fail, and then they do what they think is easiest to be popular. So that when they run into a buddy they went to high school with, he's like, hey, what are you doing nowadays? And I'm like, oh, I'm you know, this pop artist that writes songs about who God knows who what, who cares. And they think it's cool because they showed it to their girlfriend and now they think it's fun. You know what I mean? And it's just like, not taking anything away from anyone that does that because there are a lot of incredible artists that do that.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, it's just like, I don't know. It just seems like it's lost on a lot of people to like what you were saying earlier. I remember growing up, turning 16, going to shows, I would go see a band. I would buy their CD and listen to it in my CD player because that's the only way I could listen to it.
Yep.
I could like download it to my iPod, but I couldn't ride around with my iPod in and like listen to music. I had to buy the CD and play it. And I was like, you would listen to the whole album.
Yep.
And that's completely, I mean, it's not that long ago. I mean, it's 10 years ago for me, basically. But like that. It's almost lost. In 10 years, it's completely flip-flopped.
Well, to be honest, like, my wife has a newer car. She doesn't even have a CD player.
Absolutely.
I don't have one of mine.
Yeah.
It's insane, it like, I mean, I get it, but like at the same point, like, I don't, it's just weird. Like we, like recently, like 5 or 6 years ago, we went and bought fucking,
Stick to Your Guns.
We went and bought a Stick to Your Guns CD and rode around in his fucking blue car. And just wore that motherfucker out, dude. Old fucking rock dudes. Right.
I had a cardboard box full of CDs
awesome.
In the backseat of my car until probably 4 or 5 years ago. And it was like, I would get in the car and pull out like three or four that I wanted to listen to and put them in the passenger seat. And then like, someone I'd like pull it out, put another one in, or I'd like make mixed. Like I still have CDs that I made when I was a kid. That was like, basically a Spotify.
Man. When I first met Mike, the singer of Out of Time years ago, we were, I forgot where we were going. I think we were going to like one of the theme parks or something in Orlando. And he opens the back seat of my car, and on the floor is a 24 CD sleeve like case, like the booklet cases, but it was Disturbed. Yeah. So it was like all black, and it had like the face of the smiley face like on the front and the back.
Yeah.
Mike saw that and he goes, "No," and he starts laughing, like crying laughing. And I was like, "Why? What's wrong?" He goes, "That's the fucking coolest thing I've ever seen." And I go, "Oh, open it really quick." And then the first CD in there was "Break Stuff" by Limp Bizkit. He lost his mind.
Oh, that's so bad. Dude, the band that we tour in is sitting in the driveway right now. There's one of those black books that's got like a million CDs in it, and we have like every nail. That's what you call music in there. And it's just like, what year do you want to go back in time to? Let's just throw that in and listen to like everything that was cool in 2007.
Listen, I got to tell you before we go, I'm going to have Mikey tell this story real briefly. But Mikey and I have you beat. And it involves
Kids Bop.
Listening to an Under Oath CD and some hijinks. Do you want to discuss those hijinks real quick?
Well, that was kind of the CD that was just burning through my car stereo when we were in high school. Like that album came out when, what, 2004?
First,
like 2004, 2005 was our senior year of high school.
Mm-hmm.
And like that CD did not leave my car stereo. Yep. And we did this, like, Tom, no one even understands this, but like something that was like kind of important at our high school was like our school variety show, like a talent show.
Yeah.
And we had MCs, and Tom and I were one of the MCs, and for some reason we did like SNL skits like that we recorded and would like play in between acts that we introduced. And what was the show that was going on at that time? Like it was like Carpool Karaoke. But like, you know, like that, what's a British guy that does it now? Yeah. But it was like the version of that like 15 years before he did it. And we like wanted to like make our own version of that, but like a scene kid version. Like what would scene kids do if they were on Carpool Karaoke? Yeah. And like, what would they do listening to their only chase and safety? Like,
that's hilarious.
We're literally having like a mosh pit in my Jeep Wrangler, and it got out of hand. Like there was a windshield that was broken, and a guitar that we stole from the high school that was broken. It was an interesting video. I wish we could find it.
Yeah, that reminds me, real quick, like me and my friends that I grew up playing in a band with, we'd do like this thing called like drive-by hardcore dancing.
Yeah, drive-by breakdowns.
Saw it on like YouTube and like, let's do that. And we like pull up in the middle of the town, like in the dead in the center of the town where like the post office and the grocery store, all that shit is. There's like maybe 100 people out there, old people doing what old people do, you know, trying to breathe.
Sure.
And we like pull up in this blue Ford Taurus and just put on like what was the name of it? As Blood Comes Cleansing. And like loud as we can, and get out of the car. And my buddy jumps out of the passenger seat and just like Sparta kicks his door and just leaves the biggest dent in the fucking passenger seat door I've ever seen. And we like dance in it. We all get in the car. And we're like, oh my God, that was so much fun. And my buddy's just like, yo, what the fuck? Like freaking out.
There's this popular mall in Miami called Dolphin Mall. And there's an area where you could literally like stage it. It was in front of an FYE and it was perfect. Yeah. There's video, we uploaded it to YouTube, but we did it. It was Symphony in Peril's Stiletto. It was that breakdown at the end of like that song by Symphony in Peril. And in the video, like it's my car drives up and it's just the whole thing. Like we asked somebody, hey, you know, we're like a place where you can listen to like some like hard music and people are like in
Miami. That's the reason we did what we did. If that's you and your friends, that is the only
reason. I don't, it could have been us, but we got it from someone else. Like we got it from a different group of people. Cause they went all out. Like they had like a U-Haul van that people came out of. Like
no, this like, was like a
good, they like, picked up like day workers from Home Depot. Like that's what it looked like coming out of their car.
The video we saw was like a handful of friends just like us that did it in front.
Oh,
of
it was probably us then.
That's the reason we did that. Was that.
If it was a Ford Mustang, it was us. So one of my friends, you can see it in the video. He runs out and he goes to do a windmill and he slips and he's just down on his back for the entire video. And we get in the car and we drive off and he like gets up and he goes, "What happened?" And we were like, "What do you mean? We did like the whole windmill thing." He goes, "No, all I remember is I was doing something cool, like a spin kick or something, and then nothing for like and I woke up." Knocked himself out cold by slipping and hitting his head on the concrete. He could have died doing this hardcore drop.
I'm going to look up the video on YouTube. And if it's the same video, I remember.
It's a silver Mustang, it was 100% me. Because people jumped out of – it was a convertible. And two people jumped out of the car to start, like, doing stuff too.
God, that sounds way too familiar. Way too familiar. We were, like, watching that at the same time we were watching, like, the BME Pain Olympics. So, like, it all blew. Oh.
Yeah, that was the same year, actually. Two girls, one cup, probably.
Yeah. Weird time, dude. That's a weird time.
That was 15. A weird fucking time. Yeah. I saw so much shit on E-Bombs World that I
literally, like, actual literal shit.
Yeah, actually.
You're like, hey, you want to see this dude get his head chopped off? Fucking helicopter blade. E-Bombs World, dude.
Dude. After such a glowing endorsement for E-Bombs World, I can't imagine that we would have to conclude this episode, but we do. We actually do. Mike, Jesse, thank you so much for jumping on. Thanks for talking the Bronze Age with us, a little bit about you guys and your history and all that. Just real quick, let everybody know where they can find you on your socials and all that good stuff.
I think it's just
all the things. Instagram, The Bronze Age. Yeah. Twitter, The Bronze Age NC. Facebook, The Bronze Age. Spotify, Bronze Age. Apple Music. We're on Amazon. All the music shit. We got our newest music video on our YouTube channel. What is our YouTube channel?
The Bronze Age.
I think it's The Bronze Age NC.
If you need further information about the band, just text me on social media. I'll give you Jesse's social security number, and you can get pretty
much. Yeah. I love it.
It could be our video, actually. If it's, it has 52,000 views. I didn't even notice.
Yeah, it was like actually really popular.
Yo, I got a royalty check from YouTube.
Hell yeah, dude.
Yeah, you'll get that in 2035. Don't worry about it. It'll come. Awesome. Well, thanks again for being with us so much. And again, the Bronze Age, we will be playing Bar Down Breakfast 2.
Well, maybe you got to just get your tickets and see if the Bronze Age shows up.
Yeah, we tagged them, so we figured that was good enough. And
might be.
Yeah, we figured booking agent tagging someone, it's about the same thing. The obligation to show up. And if you guys get bumped from the show because we tagged like Hope's Fall 900 times, I'm sorry. But I might do that.
We keep tagging.
I might do that. And if they show up and decide that they have to play the bending 50 times for me only, then that's okay. It's okay for me.
I've had worse nights.
Yeah, I've had way worse nights than that. But awesome. Good guys. Thank you so much. It's been such a blast to have you guys on. We wish you all the best. And fucking if we see some Canes action in the cup finals, that would be something else. But
I'm not gonna
Cats might be tough to get past, but we'll see what happens. But thank you guys so much.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, man. Appreciate it.
Peace.
Later, guys.
Hell yeah.